This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Democrats right now are holding a pair of twos, and it's a question of what they want to do. They really have no leverage right now, and there's a chance they'll have a little more leverage in the future because, you know, we've seen people take to the streets. They're not taking to the streets over Neil Gorsuch, but it might be that you could get them to take to the streets when it's really, the stakes are even higher.
When we last covered the Supreme Court, it was after Justice Antonin Scalia passed away in February of 2016. At that time, many of us naively assumed that President Obama was going to be able to fill the vacancy, and we were concerned with specific issues like upholding the Obama administration's Clean Power Act. But oh, so much has transpired since then. And so much more is at stake, including, but not limited to, the preservation of the most fundamental environmental protections. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with UC Irvine professor Rick Hassan about the fight over the appointment of Neil Gorsuch to the nation's highest court. We delve into the intricacies of the filibuster and wrestle a bit over whether this is the appropriate time for Democrats to use it. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Rick Hassan. He's a law professor at University of California at Irvine. Rick, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Great to be with you.
You're a close watcher of electoral politics and the Supreme Court process. Why don't you first summarize why the nomination of Neil Gorsuch should frighten environmentalists?
Sure. Well, I think there are two reasons to be concerned about Judge Gorsuch getting elevated to the Supreme Court and becoming Justice Gorsuch. First, his overall philosophy is quite conservative. He fancies himself a follower of the late Justice Scalia, whose seat he would be filling if he is confirmed. And he said he's a believer in legal theories of textualism and originalism. And we could talk about the details of that, but the bottom line is, in many areas, this leads to quite conservative results, including skepticism about environmental regulation. So one reason to be concerned is because of a general, very conservative orientation. And even though Gorsuch said very little at the confirmation hearings, I think it came across that he is likely to be quite conservative in his rulings. The second specific reason to worry about Judge Gorsuch is that one of the issues that he has staked out a position on in his writings as a judge on the United States Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit, which is based in Denver and covers a number of Western states, is that courts should reverse what's become to be known as the Chevron Doctrine. And that's a doctrine that emerged in a case between Chevron and the Natural Resources Defense Council many years ago, in which basically the court, in an opinion by Justice Stevens, took the position that courts should defer to reasonable interpretations of congressional statutes that an agency makes. So Congress passes an environmental statute. It's not clear exactly how it's supposed to be implemented. The EPA comes in and says it means this. And the Chevron Doctrine says that if that's a reasonable interpretation and the law is ambiguous, Congress has basically given the EPA the power to do this, and the court should stay out of the way. Gorsuch believes this violates separation of powers, takes away power from the judiciary that it has to interpret the law. And so the general view would be that regulations and rules that the EPA has done in the past before the Trump administration would not be subject to the kind of deference. And this would be true across the board, but you asked about environmental rules. But agency rules across the board would be subject to much less deference. New review by someone with a very conservative orientation, I think that's not good news for people who care a lot about environmental protection.
one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on is I follow your election law blog, which is excellent. And you have a post March 22nd, and it's entitled, "Judge Gorsuch will be awful on the Supreme Court for progressives. Democrats should not filibuster him." Maybe you can summarize this post for us instead of me doing it. I don't want to misspeak for you.
Sure. Well, I've already explained why I think he would be bad for progressives. And it's not just on environmental issues. It's on issues such as voting rights and campaign finance and affirmative action and abortion and all kinds of issues that progressives care about. So I won't go into further detail on that. But let me explain my thinking about the filibuster.
But I should probably quickly summarize for our listeners who may not be familiar with the pretty arcane rules of the United States Senate what this is all about. In order for Neil Gorsuch to become the 9th Supreme Court Justice, presently he needs 60 votes to be confirmed. And when the Democrats controlled the Senate with Harry Reid as their majority leader, they abolished the filibuster for judicial appointments but left out Supreme Court appointments. So now it looks like Democrats indeed have the votes to filibuster. So what does that mean, Rick?
If Democrats do filibuster, McConnell has said that he would go nuclear. That is, he'd use the nuclear option, a 51-vote majority, to get over this problem and eliminate the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees as well. It's going to create a lot of noise when Democrats do this. But they really only get one chance to do it. And this explains why I think it would not make sense to filibuster right now. When Judge Gorsuch joins the court as a justice, he would be restoring the court to the position of a 5-4 conservative majority, the way it was before Justice Scalia passed. Now, in certain areas, Justice Kennedy, who is conservative but who sometimes votes with the liberals, has made some rulings that were helpful to liberals. So, for example, he recently voted in favor of abortion rights. He recently voted in favor of affirmative action. He was the judge who wrote the decision in Obergefell establishing that same-sex couples have the same constitutional right to marry as opposite-sex couples. If Justice Kennedy leaves the court, or if Justice Ginsburg leaves the court, those are the two oldest justices, along with Justice Breyer, I guess those three. If one of those justices leaves the court, it's really going to shift the court from a conservative court to a very conservative court. And I think since Democrats know that the Republicans are going to go nuclear anyway, they might as well save it and try to make a political statement and try to politically stop the appointment of that next justice. Vote to oppose Gorsuch, but not to try to filibuster him, because if the filibuster is already eliminated when, say, Kennedy or Ginsburg is being replaced, there won't be that ability to get the attention and make the noise at that point.
So if we're to believe Mitch McConnell, it sounds like he's ready to use the nuclear option. But will he have the votes, Rick?
Well, I think he would have the votes now. You have senators like Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, a Republican, who has ordinarily said he doesn't want to trigger the nuclear option, who said he will trigger it for Gorsuch. Maybe some of the senators would not trigger it in the case of, say, the person who replaces Ginsburg or Kennedy. I think the real reason that McConnell is trying to rush this before the Senate goes into recess is because he wants Judge Gorsuch to be on the court before the Supreme Court hears oral arguments in their April cases, which start on April 17th. Among those cases is a very important case involving religious freedom, and it's a case where a government is looking to engage in religious activities. And so Gorsuch could be the fifth vote that allows that to go forward. And so I think short term, he would rather have Gorsuch on the court before this case is heard. I actually think it doesn't matter all that much, because suppose that in this case that's being argued in mid-April, Gorsuch is not on the court, and internally the Supreme Court votes and they're divided 4-4. And then Gorsuch joins the court in May after there's been a filibuster and McConnell breaks the filibuster. Well, at that point, the court will simply hold the case, set it for re-argument next fall when the court reconvenes in October, and Gorsuch will be available to vote then.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio. I'm speaking to law professor Rick Hassan. So, Rick, is it fair to say now that after hearing Judge Gorsuch in front of the Senate committee, you think that it's okay for Democrats to use the filibuster based on the merits, but in terms of the process, you're against it and you think it's poor strategy? Is that a fair summary of your thoughts right now?
Well, Democrats get two votes, more than two votes, but there's going to be a vote on cloture, that is whether or not to filibuster him. And there's going to be a vote on whether or not he should be approved. I certainly see no reason for Democrats who are ideologically opposed to Judge Gorsuch to vote for him. I'm talking about that vote to whether or not to allow it to come to an up or down vote without breaking the filibuster. And so my view is, although if I thought that the filibuster could actually stop Judge Gorsuch, I would be in favor of it because I think his ideology is too far to the right, and Democrats have the right to vote on the basis of ideology in opposing a Supreme Court nominee. I just think that Democrats are going to have one shot to try to filibuster a judge, and that's going to get a lot of attention. And I wouldn't use it here. I would hold it for the next more important nomination.
Now, that's where I'm losing your thread, is this idea that the filibuster will help in the future. If we're not willing to use it now, what's the point of preserving it? How will the filibuster help in the future in this scenario with, let's say, a Breyer or Ginsburg off the court?
Sure. So imagine that next year, for health reasons, Justice Ginsburg has to leave the court, or imagine that Justice Kennedy decides he's going to retire and let President Trump name a replacement. At that point, I think it would be all hands on deck. Progressives would really try to put the pressure on the moderate Republican senators to oppose this new nominee, who say that nominee is as conservative as Judge Gorsuch appears to be. At that point, what tools would Democrats have? Well, if they preserve the filibuster, don't push McConnell into going nuclear now, then there'll be the question about him going nuclear in the future. And I think someone like Susan Collins may be wary of voting for a nominee who's going to change the court much further to the right on issues like affirmative action, abortion, the issues that I mentioned earlier. And so someone like Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, might not want to vote against that nominee, but might not vote to go nuclear and can hide behind the, you know, preserving the Senate's prerogatives. One day we'll be in the minority and all that in a way that she might not be willing to do now. That is, it would be a nice fig leaf for moderate Republicans to be able to not allow this change with this extreme candidate that could get on the Supreme Court in a year or two in the future.
We keep hearing that progressives only hope are these moderate Republicans, a Susan Collins or a McCain, and they tend to talk a good game against this President Trump. But it has not been often that they have put their votes where their mouth is.
Right.
McCain may have spoken harshly and Graham to speak very critically of Trump, but then they voted for all of his nominees, for example, his cabinet nominees.
Yes.
Susan Collins took a stand, quote unquote, stand against Betsy DeVos, but she already was going to sail through. This was kind of almost a fig leaf to Democrats. But I have a feeling that Democrats putting their eggs in the moderate Republican basket is fool's gold.
Well, you know, I'd say that Democrats right now are holding a pair of twos. And it's a question of what they want to do. They really have no leverage right now. And there's a chance they'll have a little more leverage in the future because, you know, we've seen people take to the streets. They're not taking to the streets over Neil Gorsuch, but it might be that you could get them to take to the streets when it's really the stakes are even higher.
I just don't see how the stakes can be any higher than when we have this very unhinged person in the Oval Office right now. He may not be in the Oval Office in 2 or 3 years. Trump's being investigated for potentially meddling in an election, treasonous type charges. Isn't this the time to use whatever weapons you have in your arsenal? I mean,
yeah, I strongly disagree with you. And so let's say it's President Pence in 2 years and it's Pence replacing Ginsburg. He might choose someone more extreme than Gorsuch. And at that time, I would want every weapon at my disposal because I disagree with you. You say things can't get worse. Things could get much, much worse if Justice Kennedy is replaced with another person like Gorsuch. I mean, you don't realize how much the court would move to the right if instead of Kennedy being the swing justice, it becomes Chief Justice Roberts. And you have to look to Chief Justice Roberts to save the day. He already did it once with Obamacare, but I don't think you could count on him on issues of race or abortion. He's not going to save the day.
But you can't count on Kennedy for issues of corporate versus human. 17-0.
Absolutely, absolutely right. I'm one of the most vocal critics of Citizens United. I'm not a huge fan of Justice Kennedy's jurisprudence, but he's a heck of a lot better than the alternative. If Justice Scalia got his way in a lot of these cases, things would be much worse. Let me give you an example in the voting rights context. So there was a case involving Indiana's strict voter ID law, and the court on a 6-3 vote voted to uphold the law. And that was a terrible ruling as far as I'm concerned, and we can get into the reasons for that if you want. But of the six justices who voted to uphold the law, three justices, including Justice Kennedy, said, this law is generally okay because most people have IDs. But there are some people who might have specific trouble getting IDs, very poor people who lived in another state, can't afford to get a birth certificate, etc. They should be able to come to court and make a case that they should be exempt from the law. And so that was three of the justices. Then there were three other justices, Scalia, Thomas, and Alito, the three most conservative justices on the court, who took the position, you know what, if most people don't have a burden, then this law is constitutional for everybody. You can't come to court and say, I've got a special burden. So in voting rights, could things get worse if we had another Scalia instead of Kennedy? Absolutely. As bad as things are, they can be much, much worse. And that's what I think a lot of people don't recognize. They think the court's already very conservative, and it is, but it could get much worse. This bad book out in the courtroom, they had the great Justice girl away. His mama stood up and shouted, Judge, don't take my boy this way. Well, son, you got any statement you'd like to make before the bailiff comes forever take you away. Now, Judge, Judge, I got this honest man could pay. The bank was holding my mortgage and taking my house away. Now, I ain't saying that make me an innocent man, but it was more than all this that put that gun in my hand. Honor, I do believe I'd be better off dead. And if you can take a man's life for the thoughts that's in his head, then won't you sit back in that chair, think it over, Judge, one more time. Let him shave off my hair and put me on the execution line.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to law professor Rick Hassan. Now, maybe we could just take a step back and explain the Republican calculus in the Garland nomination, because I think it informs how Democrats could and should move forward. I read Cass Sunstein saying two wrongs don't make a right, and maybe that might be a reason for Democrats to acquiesce and not use the filibuster in the Gorsuch case. But Republicans were ultimately pretty effective in getting their way in the Garland case. And from a Republican perspective, was it really wrong? You know, we say two wrongs. Well, we should play nice, but doesn't seem like the political process that I was raised in is germane in today's political sphere.
Yeah, well, so I strongly disagree with Sunstein. My reasons for Democrats not filibustering are completely instrumental. That is, I think they're better off to hold the weapon for the future. It's pretty clear that that whatever norms existed in the past have eroded, and the reasons Republicans never gave Judge Garland a hearing after President Obama nominated him is because they could, and they asserted whatever power they could. In fact, Mitch McConnell announced 1 hour after the public announcement of the death of Justice Scalia that no nominee of President Obama would get a hearing. They played hardball. I see no reason why Democrats shouldn't play hardball back. I think that Sunstein is trying to return to an era of norms and comity that is
outmoded, right?
That's right. It's long gone. That's not my argument at all. And I think Sunstein's wrong on that. I just think you've got a bow and arrow with, you've got one shot going up against a much more powerful enemy. You get one shot. I would just save it for the next time, because I think the next the next wave is going to be worse than this wave, and so I would wait. That's all I'm saying.
With the Garland nomination, it seemed like the Republicans were willing to gamble everything. They had a very narrow window with what they did in Garland, and I think it demonstrated that it was a zero-sum game for them. They were not going to wait for the next nomination, because Garland was older, and he was fairly moderate, and Hillary Clinton was favored in all the polls pretty significantly. There was a good chance that a more progressive potential justice was going to be nominated by Hillary Clinton. Do you think the Republicans would be trying to filibuster a more progressive nominee right now if Hillary Clinton were president? I think they would.
Well, they wouldn't need to filibuster if they had a majority in the Senate.
Oh, good point. Let's say they were in the exact same position as the Democrats. Would they be filibustering a Hillary Clinton nomination?
They well could, but I would say that even if they were in the majority, John McCain suggested before the election that if Hillary Clinton won and nominated a liberal to the court, that he wouldn't want to give that person a hearing for 4 years. So Republicans, it's even worse than what you're describing. I think Republicans are playing complete hardball.
Yeah, but they're willing to do that, and Democrats aren't. I mean, it seems like the Democrats are, like, you're advocating for a very strategic and rational approach. I don't disagree with that in any respect, but it seems like we're using our rational minds. We're bringing our chessboards to the demolition derby, and it's not going to end well. It seems like the days of Tip O'Neill negotiating with Ronald Reagan to get some kind of a compromise are long gone.
Oh, I completely agree with that. But I think that again, I go back to this idea that we're going to get one shot. I would go for the shot that I think is going to be more effective. It's completely instrumental. It's completely based on what the power dynamics are going to be. And so I'd rather save it. But I don't think they're listening to me.
But what are you saving it for? You're saving it for some imaginary scenario that could be worse, but we don't know if Ruth Bader Ginsburg is going to have to quit in the next 4 years for health reasons. We don't know if this is the fear of the unknown. It's kind of like the what's often referred to as the precautionary principle. We don't know what the situation is. So we have a very unpopular president who is being investigated for colluding with Russia, and he has a nominee up for the Supreme Court after Republicans had just not even given a hearing to the last presidents, and we're saying we're going to wait till the next one. That seems very cautious to me.
I'm not being cautious at all. It's not about caution. It's about worst case scenario. Just like you prepare for the small chance of a nuclear meltdown, if you want to use the nuclear analogy again, I think things could be much, much worse in the future. I'd rather hold my fire for that. And to go back to what you said about Garland, the question was going to be, would Republicans pay a price for not even giving Garland a hearing? And I was I wrote a piece at Talking Points Memo that got a fair bit of attention, saying that Democrats need to take to the streets to demand a hearing for Garland. And you know what? It didn't happen. And in fact, Chuck Grassley, who's the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, he agreed that there was going to be no hearing. And I said, Democrats need to go and they need to start protesting at Grassley events. And they didn't. And in fact, Grassley got more support because of this. And if you ask people for whom the Supreme Court was the most important issue, those people broke heavily for Trump. That is, the Supreme Court issue motivated the right more than it motivated the left. It's going to take either Ginsburg leaving the court or Kennedy leaving the court to potentially mobilize Democrats to really push this. Do you think that, part of the reason that healthcare failed in the last few weeks is because people were mobilized? It's going to take the same kind of mobilization. And at that point, having every weapon available, including the potential for this filibuster, would be important. So I think it's just short-sighted to, discharge your weapon now when it could be very useful. Do I want to bet that Breyer and Ginsburg and Kennedy are going to outlast the actuarial tables? I don't.
I understand that it would be a more dire outcome if the Supreme Court were tilted even more, but it doesn't seem like the Republicans would change their strategy from what it is now. That's what you're calculating.
I think they might if we saw public protests like we saw over the travel ban, like we saw about health care, which could happen the next time.
Could you change your mind about this if you saw people out in the streets advocating for a filibuster? Because there are plans afoot for progressives to rally and try to advocate for a filibuster. Is that kind of one of the litmus tests?
Too little, too late. It's, it should have happened a long time ago if it was going to happen. It's too late. And so I think Democrats will make noises about the filibuster to please the base. I'm not sure they're even going to go through with it. They well might. There was a story recently about Bill Nelson, the Democratic senator from Florida, who's feeling pressure. He doesn't want to be primaried in Florida by, another Democrat. So maybe they'll do it now. I just think that it's something I'd rather wait for in the future, given that I'm very confident now that if Democrats filibuster, that the Republicans would break the filibuster and go nuclear. I don't know what'll happen in the future, where I think the stakes are much higher.
Well, it's a scary scenario either way.
Yes, yeah, so we're dealing with bad situation either way.
And the thing to me is I see the ruthlessness with which the Republicans have managed to play this out since the Garland nomination. And I can't help but feel that Democrats need to be equally ruthless in lots of areas of the political process these days if they want to get what they want.
I agree with you. I just don't think in this particular context, being ruthless is going to get the Democrats what they want. It's actually going to backfire. And I'd say that if Trump's out of office in 2 years and it's President Pence, I'm even more worried about what judges are going to get appointed, because he's far more conservative than Trump.
I originally thought that when Trump nominated Pence to be his vice president, but my thinking has evolved on that, because the Republican Party is Trump's party right now. And if Trump is impeached and has to, or resigns, or Pence takes over, he will be a neutered president. There was no chance for Gerald Ford to win an election against any Democrat in 1976. And I feel that a Pence would be equally powerless to really get through what he wants to get through.
Yeah, that could be generally true. But I think if you're talking about nominating a Supreme Court justice who's very conservative, I think Republicans would be very amenable to that, just like they're amenable to confirming Judge Gorsuch, even though they might not sign on to much of Trump's agenda.
Well, I really appreciate your time. And I strongly suggest our listeners follow you on Twitter and read your election law blog. It's terrific work. Rick Hassan, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks so much.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Dexter Gordon and Bruce Springsteen.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.